Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty, and I'm excited. Today is Humpty Hump Day, my favorite day of the week, and, you know, it's the end of the year, and it's exciting. The snow has melted and arrived, which is not so exciting. It causes accidents, and you have to wear a coat and boots, and I'd rather just be in shorts and a T-shirt and running around barefoot. But that's not going to happen for a couple of months, unfortunately. Very sad. But as I ramble on, I just wanted to make sure that I reminded you what the purpose of this show is. And thank you all. Over 100,000 people internationally offer so many comments and so much support. I could not be more grateful. The purpose of the show was to create a forum so I can find topics of inspiration and motivation and creation and reinvention for all of you, because we all go through things. We all are learning and growing, and we're at different places in our lives, and we have adversity, and we have our trials and tribulations. Lord, do I have a whole list. But with each other, we get to inspire, and my goal is to inspire understanding. If there's anything that I can do, that's it. I want people to understand, not hate, not judge, not criticize, just understand, be understanding, and that's the purpose of this show. And can you believe January 2014 is going to be year two? As I've told you many, many times before, I'll start in January, Sunday night show at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Wednesday, same time, same bat station, because I know some of you like to sneak me at work. My blogs are going, they're just fascinating. It's a creative form that I've never utilized before, but by popular demand, I am blogging. And so, as most of you know, I pinched a nerve in my bum last night, and if you didn't know that, it's quite funny, and there's a lot of bantering going on my Facebook page, so get on there. Be my friend on Facebook. It's facebook.com/celiacroads. So join the fun. Lots and lots and lots and lots of fun people. I am actually tickled pink about our guest today. Her name is Alexandra Frazen, and she's a lover of writing, which makes me so happy, and she likes the scribbled thank you cards by hand, which I do as well. Emails are great, and jib-jab's great. I love that, but a handwritten note is always quite pleasurable. It kind of makes you feel thought about a little deeper. So she has this book called 50 Ways to Say You're Awesome. What is my favorite thing to do? Say that you rock. So her word's awesome, mine's rock. I'm looking forward to finding out the 50 ways that we can end this year and begin next year with rocking it. Let's rock it. Turn up the tunes, get into your T-shirt, dance around the house, and own it, right? I'm always telling you guys that. Alexandra, are you on?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear Hello. You loud and clear. Hello. Big hugs to you.
That.
And how do we rock it? We're going to rock it, right? We're going to be awesome.
One would hope, yes. I feel like I'm kind of in that, like, end of the year, sort of, like, foggy chai tea Christmas tree brain, but I think we are going to have an awesome time. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Yay, awesome. Well, I have a new puppy. She's quite talkative today, so that's what you hear in the background, so I apologize. For some reason, she's feeling like the fish isn't cooperating. I'm not quite sure what she's barking about.
It's all good.
It's life. So give us an idea of who you are. Who are you?
I'm glad you asked. It's one of my favorite questions to answer. The very short answer is, hi, I'm Alexandra. I'm a writer and writing teacher, and really everything that I do ultimately is about helping people to uncomplicate the way that they communicate. so a lot of my writing and writing teaching is all around simplicity and brevity. I really believe that getting to the point and being understood the first time is a beautiful, beautiful thing. Aside from kind of my writerly world and identity, who else am I? Let's see. I'm a pretty good friend. I'm a pretty respectful daughter most of the time, with perhaps a few blips during my teenage years. I love yoga. I love TV. I love comedy shows and podcasts. I spend a lot of time kind of toying with my hairstyles and makeup and nail polish. I love philanthropy. I love throwing together fundraisers for charities that I believe in. You know, like many of us here in the Western world, I'm really, really blessed, and I love to live easily and well. So that's my life.
All right, groovy. So you're like this cool goddess who helps people, you know, become concise with their writing, and you wrote this book on 50 awesome things to say about you. I mess up the title purposefully, so it's part of having fun with the conversation. But your book technically is 50 ways to say you're awesome, but we'll get into that. Did you always think that you were going to be this fabulous goddess person? What did you want to be when you growed up? I mean, I'm not grown up yet, so, but I know I'm fabulous.
No,
so.
No. Oh, yes, totally. I'm still growing up for sure.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of the origin story that I like to tell is, you know, on some level, I've always loved to play with words, and I've always had a fascination about the power of writing, about the power of communication, and using words to kind of get what you want in life in a way that's very loving rather than, you know, speaking. So one of my very first and earliest memories of the power of words was when I was probably like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old, kind of that age when most kids are just starting to learn how to read or just starting to understand that certain scribbles on a page actually represent things. And my mom and dad took me to a coffee shop and asked me what I wanted to drink. And I remember really vividly, it's one of my earliest childhood memories, like pointing to the words hot chocolate and just saying, I want hot chocolate. And then my parents saying, you know, oh, sorry, sweetie, they don't have that here. You know, they were trying to steer me away from sugar and chocolate. And I remember just like, again, pointing at the words and going, no, they do. I want hot chocolate. And I got what I wanted, and in that moment, I kind of had this epiphany that when you, you know, when you use the right words with the right people at the right time with a smile on your face, you usually get what you want, and that philosophy has kind of pervaded most of my life, you know, from my early career kind of doing student journalism, then through technical writing, then copywriting, and now today doing creating books, creating blog posts, and all the other things that I do. You know, words are really powerful when they're used the right way. Hello, hello?
All right. Sorry about that. There was a caller that came in, but she's actually just listening. So please welcome my Facebook buddy, Irene. She's tuning in to learn more about you, Miss Alexandra.
Cool.
I just wasn't sure if she had a question.
No problem. I heard silence for a moment, but I just took a moment to breathe deeply and trust that we'd be back.
That's right. Well, you definitely were back. It's the way the program works. It's not very intuitive. Anyway, so you had this epiphany in regards to being really to the point and polite. And I love how you utilized your childhood in regards to you wanted hot chocolate. I couldn't imagine taking my daughter to a coffee shop and telling her that she couldn't have a hot chocolate. That's,
oh my gosh, I know, right? Cool.
That doesn't mean. take her to a tea store or something. I don't know. So unfortunately, I lost my train of thought. But so that was one. Do you think that was your largest inspiration, that moment? Or do you think that as you grew older, there was a continuation.
It was cumulative. I think that many of us have those little clues as to what our gifts are when we're at a very young age. And I think if you sort of look back through the history annals of your life, you know, we all have these little moments, these little stories where it's like, I'm a really good listener, or like, I'm always the one who's throwing the wild party that everybody wants to come to, or like, I've always been gifted with language. So for me, you know, there's a couple of those little moments in my childhood, in my teenage years, in my early 20s, where I just kept having these little mini epiphanies that playing with words was something that came so naturally to me. And while I thought it came naturally to everyone, I learned a little bit later that that's not the case. That in fact there was a real opportunity for me to be helpful in terms of writing for people, helping other people to become stronger writers. And that took me quite a few years to kind of realize, you know, what comes naturally to me is not a natural gift for everyone.
Did you find that fascinating, or did you find that shocking? Because when I realized my gift, I found it both shocking and fascinating. And even to this day, I've been doing this for a long, long time, but I'm still humbled and shocked about what I do, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that just about everyone, or most people, I'll say, most people kind of... most people tend to sort of discredit their natural gifts. You know, we assume, well, if this comes naturally to me, then it must be easy for everyone, and why would anyone want to pay me for this, and, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So I think at some point most of us do have that little epiphany of like, I've got this thing, I'm really good at it, not everyone is good at it, this is a way for me to be really, really helpful. And it is a little bit shocking, but also delightful. And when you really own that, that's often, I think, where your most exciting career, your most exciting business can come into play.
Did you attend college to do this, or... Did it become kind of a sideline thing and then full-time?
Yeah, you know, I did go to college. I dove into college right after high school. And to be totally honest, I was not happy my first year or two in school. I was kind of in this sort of perfectionist mode of operation where I was like the perfect student, and all my professors adored me, and yet I was completely disconnected. I wasn't enjoying myself. I really just didn't want to be in school. I wanted to travel. I wanted to explore. I wanted to grow up a little bit before I committed to that kind of rigorous program. So I actually dropped out. I dropped out after about a year and a half in, and I did just that. I worked and I traveled and I had all kinds of adventures. And then when I was ready to go back to college, I actually went to a completely different school in a completely different country, had a very different experience, ultimately wound up graduating with a degree in English literature, actually. And by the end of, and that experience, that second experience in school was completely different. I felt like I was there for a reason. And I enjoyed myself a lot more. And I also kind of moved through school with an attitude of, you know, without sounding like completely entitled and ridiculous, like my attitude was, this school is lucky to have me, and I'm here to get the most that I can out of this experience. You know, I'm a paying customer, so to speak, rather than, oh, my God, I'm so lucky to be here. I hope they don't kick me out. And just kind of that shift of attitude and that shift of power allowed me to really, really get a lot more out of my college experience.
I love how you pointed that out. That was one of my bones of contention during college was how the school tried to make you – they changed the ownership as to how the relationship is. And it always drove me crazy because, you know, I'm paying you thousands of dollars to help me. That's what I need you to do. So I'm glad I'm not the only one on the planet that felt that way throughout college.
Absolutely. You know, it's a very interesting thing, college. It's like when you really think about it, it's one of the, aside from maybe like buying a house, if you choose to do that, it's one of the biggest like purchases of your life. And whether you're paying for it yourself, whether you're paying for it, you know, through scholarships, whether your parents are assisting you, whatever, like that's a big purchase. And yet a lot of colleges kind of, in my opinion, tend to treat their students as if they're, you know, sort of little kids, rather than, you know, what they really are, which is essentially like VIP customers. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of goodness can come when the student really takes ownership and says, you know, I'm paying to be here one way or another. I'm going to take responsibility for that. I'm going to get the most out of my investment, but I'm also going to expect the college to treat me like the customer that I am and to work with me to create a really, really phenomenal experience, rather than just kind of coasting through and letting things happen to you.
And I feel, you know, as for me, I'm a single mom, full-time single mom. I have one daughter, and, you know, that's a huge life investment as well. And even with the elementary school that she attends, I'm paying for that. You know, and so it's ownership. I think people have to be more confident and concrete about how they truly, and I'm not saying dictatorship or any of that. So please let me try to be clear. I'm not doing a great job. But in the sense of standing in your own strengths, totally knowing that you're investing in this and getting the fullest outcome possible. And I think that's terribly, terribly important. And people don't necessarily think that way. They don't necessarily think that this is an investment, and they think of it more, God, how did you put it earlier? It was really, really quite right on target. Oh God, I'm so lucky to be here. I'm so glad to be here. Kind of this, what's the word I'm looking for? Come on, writing coach, you're supposed to help me here.
I think the attitude that I and that I think many college students go into college with is this attitude of, you know, I'm so lucky to be here. I hope they don't take me out. You know, I'm here to do whatever they want me to do, like that kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, we're equal partners here. There's reciprocity. I'm paying to be here. They're lucky to have me. We're going to work together, you know, to create the customer experience that I want, so that I leave this getting what I really want and need. It's a much more empowered way. You know, it's the difference between like going into a, you know, to use a really reductionist example, like going into a hair salon and just kind of forking over $100 and then saying to some random stylist, like, do whatever you want, I trust you, and then kind of walking away maybe delighted or maybe like, oh my God, like what just happened to me? You know, or walking into that same hair salon and going, okay, I know what I'm looking for, I know what I want, this is what I'd love for you to do, I trust your judgment, but this is the look that I'm going for, and then having a much more empowered back and forth. You know, it's more powerful on both ends, I think, when people go into that college experience, or honestly any experience, whether it's a job, whether it's a workshop, whether it's, you know, anything that you're investing for, going in, having a sense of what you want and inviting people to partner with you rather than just letting things happen.
The word I was looking for was collaborative, having a collaborative experience. And I think turning people into this more collaborative team thinking is more beneficial socially, emotionally, mentally, and worldwide. I'm seeing a lot of change in regards to how people are thinking about themselves in the sense of how they're interacting socially. What do you see as a writing coach and as a creative person who's out there often? How are you seeing that transformation?
Yeah, well, you know, to kind of loop things back to my own flavor of writing and my own flavor of work and some of the books that I've created this year, I think one of the simplest and easiest ways to sort of foster a spirit of collaboration and to build collaborative relationships around you is simply to say thank you a lot more often. I find that in our communities, you know, if you think about moving through an average day in your life, you know, maybe dropping your daughter off at school, maybe stopping to grab a coffee, maybe picking up some groceries, maybe working with a client or a friend, or, you know, there's so many of these little moments and little encounters throughout our day when people are partnering with us and are collaborating with us, and we very rarely pause to really look someone in the eye and say, thank you for making my life a little better or a little easier. And I personally, because I'm such a wordy chick, I love handwritten thank you notes. I think that they're almost sacred in this day and age because they're so rare. And, you know, one of the huge sources of inspiration behind one of my latest books, 50 Ways to Say You're Awesome, is just this idea of, like, what if you chose 50 different people in your community, 50 different people in your life, and once a day for the next 50 days, you just wrote one simple, you know, almost three-line thank you note. How would your life transform? I mean, it's almost mind-blowing to think about, and yet it's so simple.
Well, and I love that that's your niche. I love how you are really encouraging and inspiring and motivating, going back to old school. It was so much fun the other day when I was going through my daughter's backpack because she had a couple of love notes in there. And, you know, it's third grade, so I'm going, aw. And I'm sitting here thinking about my own dating experience over, you know, 30 years from beginning to end, and how dating is, you don't do that anymore. It's like you get to know people via text or you get to know people via email, and every now and then you get face-to-face contact, but there's really no I haven't found a roomie yet. You know, that love poem, that romantic, that intimacy that we used to articulate in writing versus acronyms, and it's just very different. Have you noticed that transition as well in regards to just a human kind of cyborg?
Yeah, you know, I think that, I mean, the statistics on how much it's very interesting, actually. Most human beings, if you were to ask, you know, do you consider yourself a writer, would say, you know, no, I'm not a writer. You know, I've never written a book. Like, it's not really my thing. But when you really look at the statistics, like, most human beings will write about a novel's worth of email every year. And that's just your kind of work-related correspondence. Most people will write out about 7 million words via text messages over the course of their lifetime. So we're all writing a lot, whether we realize it or not. And yet, you're right, you know, the old school kind of handwritten thank you note, the handwritten love note, the handwritten poem, those types of things are sort of dying out. But personally, you know, I love getting a well-crafted email. I love getting a well-crafted text message. I really love getting a beautifully crafted handwritten note or letter because it's so rare, because it's so special, because it signifies that that person really sat down and took just a few extra moments to, you know, think about what they were going to say. There's no delete button, right? They really thought about it. There was intention. There's that sense of humanity. I mean, I can't go on and on enough about how much I love snail mail. And I think everyone would agree. You know, we all have that moment of, like, opening the mailbox and seeing an actual letter, and it's like a party in your mailbox. So it's really like sending these great handwritten notes is so, I mean, it's, if you look at, like, you know, comparatively, it's one of the simplest, it's one of the cheapest, it's one of the just the best ways to really show someone, I care about you, I love you, you make my life better, and I just can't encourage people enough to start doing it. And again, you know, that really was the impetus behind this particular book, because I know that for a lot of people, especially if they don't consider themselves to be writers, just kind of getting started and finding the right words can be a little tricky, which is why this particular book is full of kind of fill-in-the-blank, almost Mad Libs style note cards that people can literally tear out. They're perforated, and fill them out and pop them in the mail. So making it super easy to get started. It's kind of like little training wheels for your thank you notes.
That's very cute. So I know that you, and I want to get back to the book, but you've got so much that you do, and I just want to dig in. So you offer writing classes. So let's go into the world of being teacher, student, coach, client, that world that we do. And somebody who's completely intimidated by this concept, you know, the first roadblock is I'm not a writer.
Yeah.
We all are a writer, but what is your guidance in regards to getting them over that first hump so that they can allow the creative juices to flow? Because that's all it really is. It's just creative juices. It's I call it mental vomiting. It's like, you know, brainstorm. Just get it out. It doesn't matter if it rhymes. If you don't spell, who cares? You know, just get it out.
Yes.
But,
yes. So a couple of things, a couple of approaches, and I'm glad that you asked this question because it's something I've been thinking a lot about, you know, whether you're teaching painting, whether you're teaching cooking, whether, you know, whatever you're teaching or coaching, I think really one of the greatest gifts that you can give your students of any age is just that feeling of, right, like that feeling of like, oh, I got this. Like, I can do this. I'm not overwhelmed. And what I've really, really learned, particularly this year, is I've taught my, gosh, probably about 10, 12, 15 of my weekend writing workshops, is that it's always better to err on the side of simplicity. It's always better, like whatever kind of curriculum you've built, you want to sort of strip it down by about 70%, right? When you really get into it, the amount of information that most people are really able to absorb is a lot less than we might think. So keeping things extremely simple. I also like to, particularly with writing, but I think this would go for just about any practice or any industry, I like to begin on an extremely playful note. So I often begin by just asking people to jot down answers to really simple questions like, you know, what was the best birthday cake you ever ate? Or, you know, what was the worst haircut you ever got? Or, you know, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received? Just kind of some things to get the wheels turning without having them feel like, you know, this is writing that needs to be sort of framed and presented to the world. So beginning really, really playful and simple with simple stories is a great way to begin. Other things that I like to do are timed writing drills. So I find that the more time you give yourself to work on a particular piece of writing, often the more you overthink it, the more you overanalyze it, the more you start to kind of overcomplicate it. Whereas if I give you just 1 minute to write a poem, what flows out of you might be very, very different than if I give you an hour. So I do a lot of very short, almost ridiculously short, timed writing exercises, and it's really marvelous what happens for people when they sort of turn off that part of their brain that just loves to nitpick and sort of like splice things apart. So keeping it simple, keeping it playful, timed exercises, and then also I personally rely a lot on templates, on worksheets, on sort of fill-in-the-blank approaches to writing. I find that, you know, giving people sort of the bone structure of a piece of writing, whether it's a blog post, whether it's a bio, whether it's a manifesto, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, giving someone that sort of skeleton structure to start plugging ideas into, it creates that sense of competence. You know, they have a starting point to go from. They're not just staring at a blank page. And again, you know, I think that idea of giving someone a bone structure works no matter what you're teaching. You know, if you're a chef, maybe you lay out the mise en place, you lay out the ingredients, you know, in the order in which they're going to be used so someone's ready to roll. If you're a painter, you know, maybe you give someone kind of a template to work from, a color by numbers, if you will. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of ways to apply that. But giving students that sense of competence, like they've got this, like they've made progress, it just leaves everyone on a high, and they leave wanting more rather than feeling overwhelmed like they can never do this again.
And I also think, you know, it's perception. I think that we tend to, throughout our lives, develop this fear-based constraint in regards to certain terminologies. And this is where you flourish, words and expression. But in regards to that fear-based, you know, it's really wording it different. So, okay, we're not having a writing workshop, we're having a creative workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And that just changes
mm-hmm.
the whole tonality. It changes the physical structure of the person. And those fears don't necessarily surface. So I like the way that you also like to be creative and play with the concept of changing perception, which is really what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, the words that we use to describe things absolutely affect how we feel about them. And just by changing the name that you give something, it can change the whole energy. You're absolutely right. At one of my recent workshops, we were working on creating a business plan for 2014, but we didn't call it a business plan. Instead, we were just having a conversation about, you know, your body of work and what you're devoted to building next year, what you're devoted to creating. And it was a very different energy than let's nail down a business plan. You know what I mean?
Right. And it's so funny when I go and I'm coaching people, especially on business plans, and I come in with markers and glitter and poster board and stickers and coloring books and magazines, and they look at me funny. They're like, well, I'm trying to learn how to write a business plan. I said, yeah, we're gonna. And we end up treasure mapping. But it changes that whole construct that we perceive, you know, that we've developed over the years of this very stagnant, staunch, harsh, black and white structure into this more, okay, I'm open, I'm free. And you're able to really be open and free and creative. And then when you go back to write the official technical document, there's actually more to it than, it's like writing your resume. I have a couple of friends. What is your advice in regards to writing a resume? And then I want to delve into the awesomeness.
Yeah, writing a resume. You know, I actually used to be a resume writer many, many years ago. I kind of did a lot of freelance resume editing in my early 20s and then a little bit in my mid-20s. And my approach to writing resumes was always a little bit unconventional, but I had really good results with it. And what I encourage people to do, not surprisingly, is to really simplify. You know, I find that with resume writing, with cover letters, people tend to get really in their heads, really analytical, and they start to write in a way that they would never, ever in a million years actually speak in real life. You know, they kind of dip into all of this jargon, they make things really complicated, and then for the person reading it, you know, who's reading hundreds and hundreds of these applications a day, it just kind of disappears into the pile. There's nothing exciting about it. So what I really encourage people to do is, it's actually a little exercise that I call the girlfriend interview, and you can, of course, do it with a guy friend as well, but basically sitting down with a girlfriend and having them, not as a mock interview as if you're applying for the job, but just as a casual interview, have them ask you, hey, so tell me why you're excited about this position. What do you think you're going to be able to give or bring to the table? What's one thing you'd like to change about the way that this company is doing business? You know, how do you think you're going to set up your cubicle or your office on your first day of work? Just kind of asking you questions and having you respond naturally, just chatting, and then recording your responses with, you know, your smartphone or a transcription device or whatever, and then literally just kind of excerpting little snippets of what you've said in your natural speaking voice and using that to build your cover letter, using that to kind of structure your resume so that when the person who's reading it gets it, they can kind of hear your human voice and they can feel your enthusiasm. You're writing the way that you naturally speak. I mean, for me anyway, for jobs I've applied for jobs I've helped others apply for, that approach of keeping it, you know, professional but conversational has been really, really effective. And then in terms of your resume, also telling a story, right? Like, so adding a little bit of extra flourish, maybe one sentence beneath each job title that just says, you know, here's what I loved about this job and here's what I learned, so that we get a sense of a narrative of your life rather than just kind of black and white titles, positions, cities, states. So, you know, it's all pretty commonsensical, but again, you know, avoiding jargon, keeping it conversational, expressing your enthusiasm about this job, and then telling a story with your resume, and those things can really, really, if nothing else, pique the person's interest who's reading your resume, because it'll definitely pop out from all of the others.
That is a perfect point. When I read resumes, been in management for a super long time, the ones that are so sterile. I can't even get through them. And I say that as a management, and it's constructive, and it's not to be destructive. I'm trying to be constructive with this particular topic. It's because if your resume is so non-human, 9 chances out of 10, our relationship is going to be very difficult, because I'm a very playful, creative person, and I represent who you are and be authentic and true to yourself, absolutely. But understand that not everybody, I get very concerned about people who are one thing on paper and another thing in real life. Can you talk on that a little bit? Because I think that's really important, to be authentic in your writing, which is what you're driving at.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. I actually wrote a piece about cover letter writing recently for a website called The Daily Muse, which is kind of career advice for a lot of creative industries, but for many different industries. And it was interesting because I actually got quite a lot of negative feedback on this piece. A lot of people said that the cover letter approach that I recommended was way too out there, way too playful, you know, would never be taken seriously, blah, 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 blah. And then a couple people also commented, you know, well, actually, I'm a hiring manager, and I would love to see more cover letters like this. So, you know, there is still a little bit of a divide, I think, in the traditional sort of, you know, job applicant hiring world, where there may be some really old school hiring managers who do not want to see personality, who do not want to see playfulness in a cover letter. And then there are others who are like, yes, please serve it up. I would love to see that. So, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all approach to cover letter writing, just like there's no one-size-fits-all approach to any kind of writing. But in my experience, you know, with my own sort of job and career and business history, and with what I've seen for many, many clients, amazing things do happen when people start communicating with simplicity and enthusiasm instead of, you know, this kind of unnecessary buttoned-up formality. For one thing, it's a lot more fun for you to write. And secondly, like, you know, it's kind of like if you're sending a cover letter that you've written with genuine enthusiasm and excitement and personality, and the person reading it is like, ugh, this is horrible, do you really want to work for them anyway? Like, it's probably not a match to begin with. So, I think writing in your genuine voice, it almost auto-filters out potential companies that actually aren't right for you.
And I think, you know, as a manager, as a leader, as an individual, when you become authentic to yourself and your needs, yes, that's great that particular job or situation might have this great title and all of this stuff, but if you're going to be authentic and true to yourself as an individual on this planet and happy, that title or that particular job, if it doesn't resonate with who you are, it's going to be a terrible experience. You're just going to be miserable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and I think that in all regards, I think that whether it is, you know, little sweet love notes in third grade, or, you know, those of us who are pushing 40, to just basic conversations with the phone company, I think it should resonate and be authentic and be sweet. And there's no point in not being sweet.
Totally. You know, I often like to say that every single word that you write and every word that you speak is an opportunity to add to the love in the world or subtract, depending on the words that you choose and the tone that you choose. So, yeah, every email, every cover letter, every text, every blog post, everything that you write is an opportunity to both uplift yourself and the person on the receiving end, the person who's reading your words. So by choosing your words carefully, by changing the way that you communicate, by adding just a little more personality and positivity, you can really leave the people around you in better condition than you found them. I really believe that. It's one of the simplest ways to change the world.
It becomes contagious, too.
If you
leave somebody with a good feeling and a good, smile on their face, they're going to turn around and smile at somebody else, and it just becomes contagious like a yawn. The yawn smile becomes
absolutely
funny.
Totally. A really fun example of that that everybody can kind of play with who's listening is a couple of months ago, I was having a really, really exceptionally busy time of year. I had two books coming out. I was on this crazy tour, and, like, everything was just kind of like, wah! And I found myself getting really, really behind on catching up on emails. So I set up a little playful email autoresponder so that, you know, kind of like a vacation or an out-of-office message, but instead of just saying, like, hey, I'm not here right now, I'll email you later, blah, 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 it was very playful, it was very fun, it was actually really helpful. Like, I kind of pointed people to different resources on my website. I gave them something to do while they were waiting. And
right.
I set it up, and I initially thought, like, oh, my God, maybe, you know, people might find this totally annoying. I don't know. But I just feel like I need to do something to let people know that I see their email. I love that it's there, and I'll respond when I can, but it's not going to be soon. But what happened was so interesting because as, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people emailed me over the course of the weeks to come, I literally had so many people email again to say, I love your autoresponder, and I want to make something like that. And then they started making similar notes that had, you know, playful things to do while you're waiting or resources to look at or even kind of like Q&A answers to the most commonly asked things that people email about. And it kind of started this whole little, like, mini email revolution where, you know, people were really using and looking at email a lot differently all of a sudden just because of this one little drop in the pool that I placed there, and then they created even more ripple effects. So, yeah, you know, when you communicate differently, when you write differently, when you say thank you, when you do anything even a little bit out of the ordinary or with a little bit more generosity and love, it really can create an immediate ripple effect, and it's so beautiful to see.
Well, and one thing that I want to point out just from personal experience in history, I have always thought that your public self had to be such a way, and you couldn't have a personality, and you couldn't be silly, and you couldn't, you know, stick your tongue out or be this who you are as a silly individual. And over the last few years, I've really, really become very well aware that I am just a silly person, and I'm a fun person. I'm funny as all, and I embrace it, and I love it, and that's what makes me happy, and it enlightens up my spirit and my mood. So now in my public life, I'm really bringing that out, and what that's done, like you, as a farmer, which is what we do, we're farmers and we plant seeds and we encourage them to grow, is allowed other people to have a break, you know, just have a break in their day of, oh, wow, oh, God, Rusty posted that again, Lord, you know, and it makes them laugh and it makes them smile and it encourages them to loosen up a little bit too, because, you know, we live in this body for a very short period of time and we don't need to be so not playful. I think it's terribly important to be playful. It's heart, soul, mind,
yeah.
Body. You know, finger painting, girl, I am all over that, and I'm almost 40. I love to finger paint the kids, you know.
I love
and
it. More play.
It's all play, because the best way to experience life is through a smile. And yeah. It becomes so contagious. I think that's something that we're starting to have a revolution towards more of, is smiling and enjoying and being happy instead of this preconcept notion that it's, when you're an adult, it's just work.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
Yeah.
We can't create if we're not being creative. So, one question. Tell me all about this not tortured, I'm looking at your website now, not so tortured artist, Kent. I love that.
Yeah. So, this is a fun little story. Trying to remember way back how it started. I think it began, Kent Youngstrom is a wonderful painter and visual artist based in North Carolina. His work is just phenomenal. And, you know, he works really hard, and he's had some phenomenal success. He's been featured in some magazines and on TV shows, et cetera. And he just sent me, talk about brevity and simplicity, he sent me like a two-sentence email probably about a year ago at this point that just said something like, you know, I love what you're doing in the world. I'm doing cool stuff too. I'd love to collaborate. You know, let's talk. And we ended up having a conversation, which unfolded into us collaborating on a really beautiful line of canvas paintings and also and sort of like art prints that people can buy off of his website and frame and hang in their office. And basically, I just contributed a few little snippets of poetry, and he made these amazing paintings with them, with kind of the words sort of screen printed onto the canvas. So it came about with such incredible ease. And he is a phenomenal example of somebody who communicates with serious brevity, and yet everything is always packed with lots of love. And I really, really admire that about him. And it's one of the reasons I was like, heck yeah, to collaborating, even though I barely knew him at all.
Yeah, and I love it. It says, for those of you who are not on Alexandra's website, please go and visit her at Alexandra Frazen, FRANZEN.com. And if you go to books and things, scroll down probably about second half of the page, and you'll see it. It says, I am made of shattered stars. Oh, beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, it was a fun project for sure.
So let's get to the Feast of Resistance. Tell me. Tell me all the 50 ways you're awesome. I mean, we've already gone through probably about 17, right? Believe it or not.
Yes, well, I'll tell you a few of my favorites. How's that? So,
give us a little premise of the book first, your inspiration for the book.
Of course, yeah. So this book, 50 Ways to Say You're Awesome, that we've been kind of chatting about and dancing around, is a really, really simple book. It's essentially a little collection of 50 different compliments, you know, 50 different little ways to tell someone, you're amazing and you make my life better. So each one is like a little one-liner. And on the back of each page, and these pages, by the way, are really like they're kind of little note cards. You can actually tear them out of the book and give them to people. On the back of each page is a little fill-in-the-blank script to help you write a phenomenal thank you note. So my intention with this book is that not only will you become this like beacon of positivity, doling out compliments and love notes like crazy, but you'll really never wonder how to say thank you again. You'll always have the words on the tip of your tongue or at the tip of your pen. So a couple of the ways to say you're awesome. I like good old-fashioned, you're a miracle machine. I think that's one of my favorites. And the
you're a miracle machine. I like that.
Yeah, you're a miracle machine. I also like, this one's really cheesy, welcome to Awesome Town, USA, population you. That one makes me very happy. I want to clone you for nefarious purposes. That one's pretty fun. And simple and sweet, you're all that, and a bag of sweet potato chips is another fun one. Who doesn't love sweet potato chips? I certainly do. The book is packed with beautiful little expressions of gratitude. And really, you know, more than anything, my hope is that for people who own this book, it sits on your bedside table, it sits on your bookshelf, it sits on your desk, and more than anything, that it just serves as like a little visual reminder to say thank you a little bit more often. And if it accomplishes that, then I feel like my work here is done. And if you actually use the notes and send them out into the world, all the better.
Well, so they're perforated, so you just pop them out of the book, which means you have to buy like 4 or 5 of them, right? Because
obviously, because you're going to use it up.
you're gonna rock it. So one of the things I thought of as you were exploring some of the fun ways to say you're awesome is you can actually make coffee cups or like awesome boxes, awesomeness boxes. This just popped into my mind. Like you could take a shoebox, wrap it, make it really pretty and colorful, paint it, whatever, and then take one of your sayings and stick it on there as the awesome box. And every time you have an awesome moment, you write it down and put it in your awesome box, and that way when you're having a crappy moment, because we all have crappy moments, you go into your awesome box and pull out your awesomeness.
Heck yeah. I love the Awesome Box. That's actually, I've heard so many beautiful stories of people taking this book and really kind of making it their own. And one of my favorites was a woman who bought a copy of the book. It has, you know, obviously 50 different notes, 50 different pages, 50 different ways. And she, I think along with her mom and dad and maybe another of her siblings, they all filled out the book together for her brother. So then the whole family kind of presented him with this book that was full of notes from all of them that he could just have, you know, for a rainy day or for a crappy day, and flip through 50 different notes from his immediate family members to perk him up. So I love that. And, yeah, there's so many different creative things you can do with this book or with any flavor of thank you notes and gratitude.
So we've got about 6 minutes left, and one of the largest questions that I find most important, and they're huge, huge, huge importance, what is the one thing that you want people to walk away from today? What do you want them, it's over 100,000 people internationally, what do you want them to remember today?
Yeah, well, I had a feeling you were going to ask this question, and I came prepared.
All right.
So for everybody listening to our goofy little, you know, holiday ramble fest, this is what I'd like to say, or this is what I'd like to encourage you to do. The very, very next thing that you write today, whether it's an email, whether it's a Facebook update, whether it's a text message, or even, you know, a handwritten note, whatever you write next, make it feel like a love letter. Make it positive. Make it generous. Add some personality. Pour on the love, even if you're delivering criticism or bad news. See how loving you can make your language and see what happens. See how you feel as you're writing it and notice how the person on the receiving end of your words responds. I suspect it'll be a beautiful experience and create a ripple effect of positive sum communication in the people around you and then out in the world. And that's it. Simple as that.
All right. So aside from your website, you also teach. Do you teach locally? Do you teach randomly? Do you teach via Skype? Are you a virtual teacher? Where can people find your teachingness?
Locally, randomly, all over the joint. I teach workshops.
She's
all
a mover
over
and
the
shaker,
US.
Folks.
Mover and shaker. Yeah, I teach writing workshops all over the U.S. and Canada, and then in 2014, I'll also be going to Europe and Australia, which is very exciting. Occasionally, I do teach online, and I have sort of special collaborations that I do. And what else? I also next year, we'll be having a really, really fun Script of the Month Club where people will be able to sort of sign up to receive a new email template, a new set of writing tips, a new sort of fill-in-the-blank script for different tricky communication scenarios every single month, kind of like Wine of the Month, but with words. Very excited about that. And then I have, you know, a lot of free writing resources and tips and techniques and templates and approaches and stories on my website. I have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pieces in my archives that people can prowl through, and I love giving my best stuff away for free. I have no problem with that. I really believe in generosity as a business model, so that's something to explore as well. And like you mentioned, everything's at alexandrafranzen.com. And if you're into social media, I'm also on Twitter at alex_franzen. No Facebook, just Twitter.
Yeah, I couldn't harass you on Facebook today. I was like, where is she? She's got to be on Facebook. Who doesn't have a Facebook? Alexandra doesn't. What the heck? What the heck? Come on. No pressure.
Not my jam.
So 2014 sounds like it's going to be an adventure, exciting. That'll be a lot of fun. I am very grateful that you took some time out of your day to share with us your lovely personality, your gift in regards to really opening up and shaking out some of the the sticking points that we have as individuals in regards to words and really handwritten notes, folks. Seriously, I found somebody else, I'm not alone, who likes handwritten notes. So cool.
I think we all secretly do.
I do too, and it's funny because it's that time of year where you get holiday cards, no matter what your religious base is, you're always getting a holiday card of some sort at the end of the year. And rarely are they actually handwritten anymore. It's like something that's photoshopped and sent out in masses with a stamp. And I got one today that actually had handwriting on it. I was like, yay!
Mm.
It's just
special,
the way of the world.
Sure.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Again, thank you so much for being with us. And everybody go out to AlexandraFranzens.com and see what she's doing and buy her 50 Ways to Say You're Awesome. End the year rocking it out, styling it. And I'm telling you, make those memory boxes, those awesomeness boxes. They're so much fun. And I can just see pulling out one of her cards and being like, oh, yeah, I do rock. Woohoo! It just makes you feel good,
mm-hmm.
warm and fuzzy, and it's that time of year. So many blessings to you, my dear, and thank you again. And hopefully we will hear more about your adventures next year.
Sounds lovely. Thanks for chatting, Rusty, and happy holidays. Merry everything to everybody listening. Peace out.
All right, homegirl. She's so cool. How much fun was that? As you know, the holidays are quickly approaching. Yes, next Wednesday is Christmas. And I will not be on air. I will be in fuzzy pajamas drinking hot chocolate with maybe a dash of Bailey's or maybe not. I haven't decided yet. And watching my daughter rummage through all of the packages under the tree that just seem to be accumulating like the snow outside. And then the Wednesday after that is New Year's. Yes, welcoming the New Year's. I like to stay at home because of all the crazy drivers. I'm just too old for that stuff. But it is going to be New Year's 2014, so I'm not going to talk to you at all for about 2 weeks. And when I do, I am so pleased to say that we will be talking to Coach Jim Johnson. He is an author, an amazingly down-to-earth guy. He wrote a book, A Coach and a Miracle. Please call in. He's amazing. He just resonates this heart that is larger than life, and his story is beautiful, and I just have a hard time getting through the book without having tears in my eyes because he rocks, just rocks. Another inspirational person on this planet, a perfect way to start the year 2014. May you all have many, 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 many moments of love, light, laughter, hugs, kisses, and, you know, the laughter that I refer to is more of that snot nose laughter where you're laughing so hard your belly button falls off and hits the wall. It just projectile belly buttons. I want that kind of laughter for you for the next 2 weeks. I want you to be successful and happy and loving and enjoy your creative self because, well, that's who you are. And that's the way we were made. Many peace, blessings to all of you. Have a great end of 2013. Be merry. Be happy. Share. Collaborate. Love, and we'll talk to you next year. Peace out. Oh, and I forgot to remind you that I love you. I really love you. Talk to you next year.